Earth Podcast with your host, Jake Weaver. Engineered by Cedric Swan.
Hey, everybody. We are back with another episode of Midnight on Earth. I'm your host, Jake Weaver, and we are here to bring you more knowledge, more light, and more love. Today, we have a legend on the show yet again. I'm very honored to have John Sandbach on the show. He re-released a classic book and updated it, made it new for now, called Soul Journey Through the Tarot. And the subtitle is Key to a Complete Spiritual Practice. It's an incredible book. We have so much to talk with John about. But first, I need you to do something for me. Follow me on Instagram at @midnight_on_earth. That is the address. You can follow me there. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you go to get your podcasts, click that button that connects us so you know when legends come on, you know exactly what's going on. You get a notification to wherever you get that. You know you can come here and, of course, bring a friend. Bring someone that you know that loves these type of topics. Bring them here. Look what we're doing. Look at the incredible work. Look at the people. It's so amazing. MidnightOnEarth.com. Okay. So we're just about to talk to John, but first we have to read his bio. So here we go. John Sandbach is a highly respected astrologer and tarot researcher who has been working professionally in these fields for more than 57 years. He is the visionary who channeled the Chandra symbols of the 360 degrees of the zodiac system. And he offers private astrology and tarot tutoring and readings online. The author of several books, including The Circular Temple and Astrology, Alchemy, and the Tarot. He lives currently in Kansas City, and he is here with us today. Hello, John Sandbach.
Hello. It's so wonderful to be here.
Thank you. I deeply appreciate your presence. You know, we haven't ever really, in the 180 episodes that we've recorded, we haven't really taken the deep dive into tarot, and especially someone who has their own version of this and is able to create such a deep language for us. So it's really awesome that you're here, someone of your stature, to tell us about this. It started for you when you were 18. I can't believe that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. Well, of course, the first thing I got into was astrology. And this urge just came over me, like, now it's time to learn astrology. So I started just going into it obsessively. And a couple of years after I started, I had a friend, and she was on the phone one day with her friend, and she was telling her friend about me, and the person asked, well, can he do my chart? And I told her, I don't do charts. You know, I don't feel like I know enough yet to do such a thing. And she says, oh, come on, you've been reading about it. Please just tell me something about it. Just draw up my chart. I want to know what you think. So I did that. And, she paid me, and then she started sending friends. And so it just went from there. I just learned astrology really by doing it.
And that tapped you into all of these really high frequency, cool, magical concepts. It helped you expand that awareness, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. And that same woman who first, whose friend first got her the first reading I ever did, that woman became an astrologer, and she moved to California, and she joined the Church of Light, which was run by C.C. Zane, and he had a school that taught astrology and other things. Well, C.C. Zane had a book called The Sacred Tarot, and I read that book, and I was just very impressed by it. It's a wonderful book, and so I just started reading it over and over and over. And I bought cards. and I started doing readings. And the way it really got me into it was that each card had an astrological ruler. And so I could use my knowledge of astrology to understand the tarot. And that is a key concept in the book that I wrote, The Soul Journey Through the Tarot, which was originally called The Golden Cycle, A Text on the Tarot. And in that book, I use all of C.C. Zane's original astrological rulerships for the cards.
Interesting. Yes, I did notice, and you talk about this in your book, that C.C. Zane was the foundational kind of mentor that guided you as you created this system that opened up a certain understanding for you that allowed you to bring this in. And would you say this book is channeled?
Yes, more or less. You know, these energies come in, and sometimes I just let them kind of take over and say what they have to say. Other times they're working with what I'm saying, combining my ideas with theirs. So it's very fluid.
Interesting. Interesting. So that is how this developed. But again, the C.C. Zane information is what unlocked that for you. But normal yes. Tarot doesn't normally incorporate astrology. So when you were first exposed to that, was that a new concept?
Well, no, it wasn't a new concept to me. But I think what I was very impressed by in the C.C. Zane book was how he related the meanings of the astrological signs to each card. It really made sense. And then on top of that, he related each card to numerology. And the numerology and the astrology and the tarot became kind of a three-point system that I was working with: astrology, tarot, numerology. And this all just made so much sense to me. You can explain why every number it is associated with the planet and sign and card that it is. And I was teaching with a man named Ron Ballard. We were teaching together, and we lived together. And one of our students, a woman named Teresa, she said, "Oh, I would love to learn so much more about this." She said, "I really wish I could just live with you guys. And that way, you know, I could just be like, become like an apprentice." So after she left the tarot class that night, I talked with Ron, and then I called her up and I said, "Hey, you want to move in with us?" And so she did. And she had studied a system of tarot that was different in the rulerships than the one that Ron and I were using, the ones from C.C. Zane. And the man who taught her those rulerships, he said to her, "You know, the ones I'm using are the ones that most people use. And if you go along with what John and Ron are teaching you, then other people are not going to relate to like what you're doing." She would argue with him and she would say, "Yes, but they're so good at reasoning all this out and explaining why these rulerships are this way." And he would just say, "Well, you know, like, I don't care. I'm going back with the old traditional ones, rulerships."
Right. So essentially your information was like a new paradigm. You were bringing essentially older information into this because you brought a multidimensional perspective, and that was either scary or seemed like nonsense to that person.
Yes, exactly. And you know, so what I started doing was I went back looking at his rulerships, and those rulerships he was using come from a book called the Sefer Yetzirah, which is a very highly respected book on Kabbalah. And what I thought was, you know, these rulerships he's using, they can't be wrong. This book is too high a vibration, too high in nature for them to be wrong. But yet I also feel like the rulerships I'm using that I got from C.C. Zane can't be wrong either. And then I started delving into Kabbalah, and what Kabbalah believes is that all systems are right in their own context. So what I started doing was comparing my system to the Sefer Yetzirah system, and what I came up with is that the Sefer Yetzirah rulerships are the actual rulerships of the cards, and that my rulerships I was using are the therapeutic rulerships. They're the ones that heal the energy of the card.
Interesting.
This was very exciting because it came up with, for instance, in my system of rulerships, Arcanum 12 is Pisces, but in the Sefer Yetzirah system, it's Libra. So what this means is that Pisces heals Libra. This is like a spiritual message, the connection between Pisces and Libra. And it's very profound. And I've been working with that and contemplating that since then. And in the Soul Journey Through the Tarot book, it's what I just told you about is spoken of. It's talked about.
Yes.
But it needs to be addressed in far greater depth, because there's so much profundity and meaning there to be mined.
In the general sense, though, the tarot is some sort of divination type of energy. There's some sort of ritualistic mythology behind it, or methodology, I should say. Some ritualistic methodology that allows for certain information to come through. How does that work before you even attach your multidimensional aspect to it? How does the tarot work energetically from your perspective?
Well, I have a friend named Elias Lonsdale. Do you know who he is?
I do not. The name is ringing a bell. It's in there somewhere, but I'm not sure.
He's a wonderful astrologer, and he would be great on your podcast. It'd be wonderful if you could have him. But anyway, sure. What Elias says is we start from the concept that everything is perfect just as it is, which is really kind of shocking to a lot of people because they think, oh, perfection is something you have to strive for and it's something you'll never attain. You know, it's beyond the physical capacity and whatever. But no, Kabbalah believes everything is perfect just the way it is. Now, of course, it's changing all the time, so it's moving toward greater perfection. But for its place in evolution now, it is perfect just the way it is. And so starting from that premise, then if I shuffle the cards, the order they're in is the order they need to be in. They're in their perfect order. They're always emanating from the tarot is perfection. And so we can ask it any question we want simply by picking up the deck, shuffling the cards, and turning over the cards, knowing that the cards are always going to be in the right order. That's never a problem. The problem is the question you ask. And there's certain questions that just don't work very well, like yes, no questions.
I know it's hard to put into words. It's definitely an experience in itself, and it's an integral part of, it seems, life, as you detail in your book. But there's some sort of interface and some sort of dialogue happening.
Yes.
I guess that's about as far as you can go with it. It just, for the average person, for the layman, when they hear tarot, they think of the standard deck, and then they think about all the variations that are out there. I know that you talk about in your book at the very beginning, the 007 James Bond tarot.
Yeah.
And I've recently seen the Grateful Dead tarot, and there's just so much out there, but there's, it's so much more significant than that.
Oh, yes. And that's kind of a problem. You know, the book, The I Ching.
Yes.
which is what the Chinese use for divination. Well, those little pictures, the hexagrams, are just a straight line or a broken line, alternating and in patterns. And so it's very, very simple, and it doesn't change. That's just it. Whereas the tarot, there's been so many different ways those cards have been depicted, and so many different symbols and imageries that have been put on those cards. And it can be quite confusing. But if you go back to the astrological rulerships and the numerological rulerships, those are the things that will help you, I think, the most understand the meaning of the cards.
So do you feel like the best tarot cards are the most authentic, are the ones that have those represented correctly in their artwork?
Well, yes, I've seen some that are just feel wildly off base, you know. And, you know, like Jodorowsky, he's a Polish film director.
Right.
He wrote a book on the tarot, and it's great. His book on the tarot, I really, really like it. And he goes back to the old Marseille deck from Marseille, France. It comes to us from like the 14th century. And I think you can't go wrong with the symbols on that deck.
But when people go to, let's say, authentic intuitives, authentic psychics, and they have what they feel like is a valid reading, are you saying without the astrological component, without the other components, it's missing something? It's missing something vital.
Well, it may be missing something vital, yes, but you know, I'm a firm believer in the intuition. Okay. The intuition, when it is pure, has the ability to compensate for anything.
True. Yes.
If you have a really good, clear intuition, that's great. And so even if, say, somebody is working with a tarot deck where I would feel the imagery and the symbolism are all off and garbled and switched around, you know, if they turn those cards and then the cards help them to intuitively pick up on what that person needs to hear and what's going on in their life, then it's a great thing.
Right. The messages are coming through wherever that is, that mysterious thing, whatever, wherever it's coming from, it's the transmission's still happening.
Right. And I think that that's where we're headed in our evolution as a species, is toward utilizing more and more of our intuition.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, it seems like the extrasensory perception is linked to what people are calling 5D consciousness, 4D consciousness, 6D, wherever people want to place it. It's including information that's outside of the third dimension. Therefore, it has to be rooted in things like that. The intuition is reading that information. It's able to process it. The heart brain can process it.
Yes. Yes. And you know, there was a point in our lifetimes where Pluto moved inside the orbit of Neptune, and now Neptune is the farthest away planet from the sun. So there was a time when Pluto played that role of farthest away planet. It was kind of like, in a way, the ruler of the whole solar system. But now it's Neptune, which signifies the intuition.
Oh, wow. How do you process the other planetary objects that are out there? I believe there's around 515 planetary objects just in our solar system. Some of these, to me, look like planets. They have moons, yet they're not listed in any astrology books or astronomy books, for that matter. Both fields just kind of say, oh, those are just, you know, Makemake, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. There's so many of them. What do you think about that?
Well, I have a friend that lives in Wales named Paul Swan. He's a wonderful astrologer, and he explores things like the meaning of asteroids and planets like what you just mentioned, the Makemake. And, you know, all of these things can be they have meaning.
Absolutely.
And you can intuit the meaning, and then you can use them in astrology. But I have a cutoff point, like where I get overwhelmed. You know, it's bad enough working with the 10 planets, and then I work with the four major asteroids. I put those in every chart I do. I do work with those.
Okay.
And when I've looked into other asteroids, I've thought, well, this really is valid, but I can only look at so much. And then now also what I'm doing is I'm looking at multiple charts. So I'll look at your natal chart and your prenatal chart, and then a chart that's called the water chart and a chart called the air chart and one called the boundless quest chart. Wow. So there's actually, and then there's one called the, well, it's the fifth element chart. So there's actually five different charts one can look at.
Wow.
You know, most people don't want to deal with that. I mean, most astrologers don't want to deal with that, and I don't blame them.
But being that you're an elder in the field and you know what is valid at this point, I'm sure you've vetted everything. This is really giving you the best spread of information for an individual.
Yes. Yes. And there's so many different things out there with astrology, and I think all of them have validity, you know.
Right, right. But that is, seems like with five different charts, it sounded like that's a pretty good cluster of information there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, like when I first learned that method, I had these five charts that were my charts for me. And I would look at these and I got to the point I felt like I was on LSD or something. Wow. You know, it was like all these layers and levels. And I kept thinking, yeah, boy, this makes sense. This is true. It does make sense. But it can be very difficult to communicate all that to another person.
Well, that's where books come in handy, because you can read the information, you can digest it, let your subconscious process it. You go back, you read it again. It's now processed, you glean even more information. And you talk about in your book about how you felt like this book was meant to hold the energy of Tarot. Can you talk about that?
Yes. You know, I mean, I'm an animist. Really, I'm really into Kabbalah, and anybody who's into Kabbalah is ultimately is an animist. And what that just means is I think everything's alive.
I agree.
Everything is alive.
I agree with you. I agree with
and,
you.
Yeah. So the Tarot is a being. And I just had a flash in my mind of this gigantic being, you know, like miles high, covered in minute tattoos over her whole body. That's what maybe the tarot deva or angel would look like, because all these tattoos are all the different signs and symbols that go, you know, with each card and like that. And
interesting. But then Tarot itself, it seems like, would be, with every advanced civilization across the universe, it's a divination technique. It's almost archetypal in nature.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And when we make contact with people from other planets, with beings from other planets, it'll be very interesting to me to see what kind of divination they use and do. That'll be quite interesting.
Well, it would seem that in order to travel these distances and fold time and space, that you would be divining technology. The technology itself is a form of divination.
Yes, exactly. It is.
Which is going to be, again, mind-blowing. It's a frequency shift. I'm prepared for it. I feel like I've been preparing my whole life for it. I'm sure you feel the same way as well.
Oh, yes.
Because humanity, I think intrinsically, innately, we know that there's life out there, and we're getting restructured energetically to process that experience.
Oh, yes. I even feel, too, that there the level of complexity of some of these entities is extreme, to the point that they can look down, say, on New York City, and they see individual people simultaneously, all, you know, millions of them, and they can tap into what they're thinking, feeling, what they need, what's going on, you know, like that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. That's the quantum experience. I mean, literally, you're outside of time and space, consciousness, love. You think of consciousness being pure love, intersecting with the needs of the individual and the collective. Yes, it all makes sense. I mean, it is what all the great spiritual teachers and writers and lecturers of the ages have talked about.
Yes.
I believe them, some of them.
Yes.
And this book really, again, fleshes this out from a multidimensional perspective, because you can take a tarot deck, at least one that's designed correctly, and then use this book to really get that much more information, an incredible amount of information.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yes. And, you know, I'd say that the basic requirement of the deck is, the most basic requirement is the 78 cards.
Right.
It has 78 cards, and 78 is a very, very interesting number. You know, if you add up all the numbers from 1 to 12, you get 78.
Interesting. And then 78 becomes 15, right? Which becomes 6?
Yes, exactly. And 6 is the two paths in the major arcana. It's ruled by Venus, and it's the energy of love.
Wow. Because everything at the end of the day is a oscillating vibration. It's a moving, measurable in some sense form of energy, just like numeric energy. It's all the same.
Yes.
And the ancients knew this. Why did we lose touch with this?
Boy, things kept getting lost, you know? It's very dismaying to me, stuff like the Library at Alexandria burning, you know.
Everybody's upset about that one. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the Europeans going to Easter Island, and at the base of most of those statues, there were plaques that were inscribed with the language of Easter Island, telling about who these entities were, like that. And they took all these plaques back to Europe, and supposedly they eventually burned them.
Oh, my God.
You know, or all of the Mayan and Aztec information that's been lost.
Oh, I know.
You know, they had all these books.
Oh, my God.
They were all destroyed, you know.
It's terrible. I have a feeling, because the divine is just love, I have a feeling as we evolve, there'll be situations where we unearth some of that lost knowledge that's not ready to come out. Those books will just appear, the ones that were destroyed by low frequency human behavior. There is that book, A Brief Account of the Destruction of the West Indies, I think I got the title right, where they talk about that. And it's just absolutely atrocious that we suppress knowledge, but it was all because of power. It was all about consolidating power in that time when they could, but now the genie's out of the bottle. Technology, the ability to turn information into electricity and send it across the world instantly, it's unstoppable at this point. There is an ascension happening because of the information like that's found in your book.
Yes. And I think all those things are really wonderful. But one problem with technology is it's like just a tool. So a tool can be used in a positive or a negative way, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So we're doing a lot of experiments with technology. And hopefully, as time goes on, we're going to be able to use what we've learned in a positive way, in a life-supporting way.
As a Libra, I'm a total optimist. I have to believe in humanity. I believe at the core of humanity is infinite love. And because of that, that we will triumph. We will have the realizations to push past our previous mistakes into something more than we've ever been before, truly a being of love and light.
Yes. I have a good friend, a poet. His name is Whit Griffin, and his works are so wonderfully mystical. And he talks about that, and this is not just his belief. He got this from, ancient texts and ancient wisdom, that what we're doing is we're all evolving into angels. That's what we're going to become. And then we're going to head off to other planets where angels are needed. And that's what we're going to be. We're going to be helping people with their evolutionary path.
Oh my God. I've heard that as well. But just you saying it just still gives me chills and goosebumps. Yes, of course. That is the natural progression of life. Life is for expansion, yes, exactly, and fuller expression. It doesn't want to retract. Life force pushes outward into evolution, into that higher state for humanity. I can't wait. It's going to be incredible. We're going to be out there as ambassadors of love and light, sharing, hopefully sharing our artwork, because you know what? If we can do it, and we will do it, that means that other civilizations, other races out in the universe have done it, and we're going to interact with the angels of other planets.
Exactly. Exactly. Whew. And it just sounds, it's just wonderful. Yes.
It gives me hope for the human experience, because we're learning. There's an openness. If you think about tarot and the things that you talk about in your book, numerology, astrology, those were persecuted at one point, and then later not really accepted by society at large. Now it's very accepted. In fact, it's mainstream, you could say. I'm sure you've been doing fantastic, and the awareness has just exploded.
Oh, yes. And you know, when I was back in the 1970s and 80s, when I was teaching tarot, we got a lot of questions about, but isn't that satanic, or isn't that negative and evil, and won't you draw bad things to yourself, you know? And I had to speak out against that as much as I could, and try to explain to people the real nature of the tarot, that it too is just, it's a tool. And so, of course, any tool can be used in a negative sense. But it seems like people are kind of over that now. I don't hear people talking about that kind of thing.
No, it's not necessarily like a Ouija board, though it is a divination tool. It seems like that methodology is a little bit different, though. In your book, you do say that it is limited by the person using it. So if their intention is only to go into lower astral areas to try to be negative, that's all they're going to get.
Yeah. When I say to people, it's limited by who's using it, it's exactly like a piano, you know, where some people, they don't play the piano. They maybe can do chopsticks or something like that. And other people are masters at the piano and can play all these wonderful things.
Right.
So the tarot is all about how you play on it, you know?
Yes. And also it seems that really the attachment is the fact that the information's coming outside of probably the church's control of the time. So it got those labels. If you're doing something with the intention of love, if you're using the information to better yourself so you can increase your service, not better yourself for your own pile it up or grandiosity, that to me, that's white magic. To me, that's serving the Christ consciousness, Buddha nature, Krishna consciousness, whatever you want to call it. Therefore, it is absolutely perfect.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree with that. And, you know, you mentioned about the 78, 7 plus 8 equals 15. Well, 15 in the major arcana in the Arthur Edward Waite deck is called the devil. And, I find this idea disturbing. That 15 card is about all the hardships that we face, the challenges. It's about the discipline needed. And all these things are difficult. And so we associate them with something bad, you know, because we don't like those difficulties, those hardships. But there is so much to be learned from hardships.
Yes, absolutely. That's the contrast currently in this bandwidth of reality. That's how we evolve and grow, which is a big part of your book, is evolution.
Yes, exactly. And you know, another thing too is, so that the 78 is 6 times 13. And 13 is another number that's gotten a bad rap. And 13 is a number associated with the moon because there are 13 new moons every year. In fact, from one new moon to another is about 28 days.
Right. Yes.
So if you multiply 13 times 28, you get 364, just one less than a year, one day less than a year. And when the Romans started going up into Europe, they found these cultures that worship the number 13 because they worship the moon. And so the church, to try to prevent those northern religions from flourishing, they popularized the idea that 13 was unlucky, that 13 was bad, and like that.
You know, it's the fear of these ancient tribal understandings, that knowledge that was before these structured churches, which it's all a part of the human story. These things manifested, yes. It's cause and effect. They manifested for some purpose, but now it's a new time. And that's part of the reason you recreated this book with all new information and brought it into now.
Yes, exactly.
Because this is a new time and a new age. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Talk about which part?
Oh, about how you redeveloped this book for now and made it updated for this current time.
You know, when the book was first done, it was put out as actually a correspondence course.
Okay.
And so what would happen, it would be, we talk about the major arcanum, and then maybe in a later lesson, we talk about it again. And then in a later lesson, we talk about it a third time. And we do that with other subjects too. And so when we put all these lessons together, you have this kind of a patchy thing where the major arcana was talked about it in three different places in the book. So the first thing I did was collect all the information that was the same together in one place in the book and restructured it that way. And then I feel like I was very lucky with the woman I drew to me who became my editor. She restructured the book even more, offering suggestions to me, helping me to be aware of what I needed to do to make everything more lucid. And she did just a great job. A really wonderful job.
Oh, I agree. I think the book is absolutely fantastic. I don't think I've ever seen a book go card by card like that and really just extract that multidimensional high frequency information coming from a lot of different places. The numerology behind it, the different herbs behind it, a lot of colors, everything.
Yes. And you know, I could have made the book, it could have been even longer. Inner Traditions, their parameters on books is they want to publish something that's more than 40,000 words, but less than 100,000 words. And so this book came out to 99,500 words.
Oh so my God.
It was right at the edge of their limit. And really what I'm writing now is I want it to be like a volume 2 of this book.
Wow.
And so it's going to expand the information even more. And I think whenever you come up with a new system, I feel like I need to do a lot of writing on it just so people will get into it more and more deeply.
Yes, I have a friend and a guest who's been on the show, Tyler Panor. He created a system called Living Astrology. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I haven't. I'd like to know about it though.
He has students. It's absolutely amazing. He tied astrology to alchemy and he created a new system that a lot of people feel is very valid. I highly recommend you checking that out.
Oh, great. What is his last name again?
Panor. It's P-E-N-O-R. Tyler Panor and Living Astrology.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to look into that.
And he's been on the show twice, actually. You can actually check out our episode and get a rundown on this. But
has he written a book on this?
I'm not sure if he wrote a book, but I know he's teaching courses. And we did do the two episodes. We talked about it quite a bit.
Yes. So he's probably generated a lot of, written material. Course, I'm sure.
Yes. You know, he has the, like the modules, like the course modules that are online, and then you get the written work in real time and get feedback and all of that.
And what's the name of it again? The
Living Astrology.
Living Astrology. Yeah, Tyler Penor.
Mind-blowing. I've never heard anybody talk about it in the way that he has.
Oh, I want to go and look it up. I want to see what it's about.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, you really made me think, too, when we talk about how 78 broke down to 15 and then to 6. Before 6, which you talk about as perfection in your book, and numerology says represents perfection, there's the separation, which is the 1 and the 5. And the separation from perfection is where the problem started, supposedly, in the Judeo-Christian mythology of this Lucifer figure that broke off from the general consciousness, and some people say the original AI, but this deviation of rebellion.
Yes.
Very, very interesting.
Separation from perfection. That's a very interesting idea.
It's a futile effort, because I do know people that put their spirituality in that bandwidth, and I don't understand it, because to me it's a futile effort. The whole metaphor, the mythology behind the Lucifer figure, to me is rebellion in the face of something. When you're inside the mind of God, it's like you can't rebel. So it's like it's futile.
Yes. Mars is the energy of conflict, and you know, I think the human race is going through so much trauma and crisis with what to do with and about conflict and how to handle it, you know. And you know, when you think of all the destruction that happens, like say in the wars that are going on, if all that energy was put toward being constructive or problem solving, it would be just incredible.
Oh, the amount of psychic energy, the manifestation energy, the physical energy, the resources, the monetary energy. If that were focused on, like you said, research and development of the human experience, my God, we would be in an incredible place. We have this struggle as humans with conflict. And tell me what you think about this. Because conflict, people say, is a universal law. And I think that it could be, but it might be able to be transmuted with another universal law. So people say that the yin and yang represents that conflict. It's the universal law of yin and yang. But what I think, and tell me what you think about this, John, I think that humanity's ascension story is much like a piano scale. You know, you think of a C major scale. You got low C on the bottom and high C on the top, low C, high C. But when we evolve, we jump up an octave, and what we used to define as high C, we now define as low C. And high C is way up here. It's like, wow. And then you do it again and again. The universal law of yin and yang, the polarity still exists, and yet we're in this beautiful place of crystalline love.
Yes.
Now, do you think?
Yes, exactly.
Do you think that's possible? Because there's people that say that we cannot exist as humans without conflict.
Yes. Well, I think conflict can be very positive. You know, like what if I got together with Tyler Pernod?
Pernod, yes, incredible human.
Pernod. Yeah. What if I got together with him and started comparing ideas? You know, we might figure out that our ideas conflict in certain ways, that we have different ideas about things. But possibly if I heard his ideas, it might open my eyes to something or enrich what I was doing. And I would hope that I could have the same effect on him. So conflict can end up in growth.
Right. It's just about the conflict that's not rooted in love. Because love, when we have that love, that universal love for each other, we can compare and contrast, but there isn't the attachment, this attachment of, I don't know, it's lower energy. We're going to evolve past it.
Yes. And I think the source of negativity, ultimately, what Kabbalah tells us is, and I believe this, is the ego. The ego is separative in nature, and the more we let go of our ego, the more we can open up to cosmic realities. And letting go of ego doesn't mean you lose your sense of self, or it doesn't mean that you love yourself. You don't love yourself, but you come to love yourself in a way that is inclusive of the whole universe and of other people, you know.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's almost like a cosmic ego, you could say.
Yes, exactly.
And it's backed by faith. I think it's backed by faith that the divine is going to take care of you. If you integrate that faith that the divine, whatever that is, that mystery, loves you and you're in resonance with that love, then there's no need to have the insecurity of ego, because this, all your security is coming from the divine. Like, what are you worried about?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's really beautifully put.
So tell me about the language of space, because this is something that you integrated into your tarot experience as well.
Yes. Well, the way that got integrated into the tarot is that C.C. Zane and many others have put the Hebrew alphabet on their cards. And the Kabbalists believe that the letters of the alphabet were the first thing to be born, and that actually what the letters of the alphabet are different vibrations. And then these vibrations, through combining in different patterns, created everything else, created the whole universe. So linguistics has always been a big part of the tarot. And back in the 70s, I met a man. He came to Kansas City. His name was Dr. John Weilgart. And he believed that he had been contacted by extraterrestrials who gave him a language. And they said that this language was spoken amongst millions of planets, actually. Mm-hmm. And Dr. John Weilgart, he was a doctor of linguistics. He had a PhD in linguistics and also a PhD in psychology. And for a while, he had been given the honorary title of Chief Psychologist of the United Nations. And he did this very interesting thing whereby he ascribed to every sound of the alphabet a meaning. And so then he invented a language called A-Ui. And A means space. U means mind. E means sound. So A-Ui means space, mind, sound.
And it's spelled A, lowercase a, capital U, capital I.
Exactly. If it was an uppercase A, it would mean time rather than space. Then with A-Ui, then you can make up your own words, and if you speak them to another person that understands the concepts of A-Ui, they can understand what you're trying to say, because they just go back to the letters you're using, and as you're putting those together, you're making up things.
And he started receiving these messages in the 50s, I believe, if I remember your book.
Exactly. Yes. Wow. Yes, he did. And he was a very otherworldly person. And so Ron and I had him down, and he stayed with us and taught at our house.
Oh, my God.
Classes in A-Ui. And that was just great.
When was that? Wow, because he's passed now, right? He's graduated to the next dimension?
Yes, yes.
So when were those classes that you were doing with him?
This was back in the 1970s.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. Wow, I'm getting chills right now.
Early 80s, too. And it's very hard to explain even what he was like. Like, we gave him his own room in our house, and at night he would go in there and we'd hear him talking to people. And we thought he was possibly talking to space aliens. And he knew all these different languages. He was multilingual.
So he was able to break it down in his mind, in his consciousness, phonetically, and he could be a person that had a more activated center of DMT in his brain, and he was able to interface with those beings that are in that dimension, and they're trying to teach him as they've taught so many others. I've talked to so many people that have had similar experiences where they're channeling these entities and getting this information. It's mind-blowing.
Yes, it is mind-blowing, and it's wonderful. It's like there's this great richness and wealth around us that's just waiting for all of us to tap it.
And it's almost like a cosmic egg. We're cracking, just like Joseph Tilton Pierce said in the 60s, we're cracking the cosmic egg right now.
Exactly.
Well, how does it feel for you? Sorry to cut you off there. How does it feel for you all of these years later to see it blossoming over decades? You've been doing this 57 years. I mean, you have the perspective.
Yes, it's utterly wonderful, and I want to help other people as much to in their process of growth, you know, and clearing out anything that's standing in their way of their own personal evolution.
But is it shocking for you, though, to think of when you were 18 to now, how consciousness has changed, how people interface with each other and matter itself has shifted? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, so I have a friend who, he's now like, 40? I'm 35 years older than him.
Okay.
And I said, you know, given that what's happened in the world and society and technology, I'm not really 35 years older than you. I'm more like about 150 years older than you are. In other words, the gap between us. When I was in grade school, there was no computers. I remember going down to the appliance store so we could see the first color TV. You know, the changes that have gone on have just been gigantic, you know.
Time itself is moving faster. That's the other aspect as well. When you talk about the gap being so huge, 150 years, it's because during that time, time itself was moving slower in an experiential sense, though in a measurable sense, you could say, well, it was spun around the sun. Okay. But experientially, time was moving slower. I don't care what age people are. Time is just like going so fast now because of the way information moves.
Yes. And, you know, like, for instance, so when I started doing astrology, computers didn't exist. So back then, when I drew up a chart, it would take me, I finally got so I was really fast at it, meaning I could draw up a chart maybe in 20 minutes to 30 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Now to do a chart takes me 5 seconds. Because right. I just push buttons and there it is.
And it's precise to the, you know,
totally
degree.
Totally more precise than ever I could have done it by hand. Wow. And what that's done is it's opened up astrologers to new techniques, which they wouldn't have formerly used because those techniques would have been too cumbersome by hand, too difficult and time consuming.
Right. Especially when you talk about the five charts. I mean, that's five to 6 hours of tedious work per person. That would, it would be too expensive, but now we can do that. But before I forget, I do want to cap off what we were talking about the language of space. Why did you bring that energy into your tarot description and into your definitions?
Well, it was because it was a new way of bringing linguistics back into the tarot, not thinking that it was better or something than the original Hebrew, because the original Hebrew is holy and perfect and wonderful. But what A'u'i does is it explains at deeper levels what those cards mean.
So because it's literally a universal language. It's the language
and
of consciousness.
And these vibrations, are not like arbitrary at all. Like the G sound that goes with Libra. And so the G sound vibrates with Libra. If you want to understand Libra better, then tune into G. Tune into, like, you know, what that signifies or what it feels like, that sound. Because when we say ga, we say it way back deep in our throat.
Interesting.
You know?
You think of good.
And Libra is about relating.
And you know, really powerful, positive things.
Yes. Yes.
Golden, you know, you think of the words that start with G. Graduation, like we said earlier. Interesting. You know, there's an apocryphal text, I believe, about a young Jesus who talks about these things as well, the sound of the words and what they meant. Now, I don't know how authentic it is, but I do know it's out there. It's AD. It was sometime in early AD where a young Jesus talks about these very same things.
Yes.
And people don't think about that, because if you look across the spectrum of our corporate world, look at the big companies, look at how they use that sound and those sounds, the Apple, the alphabet, they're always using A's. They're always using certain phonetics because they know the power and the things that we're talking about, that magic.
Well, yes. And in the modern world, because of the way things are structured, we lack time and space. People feel like they don't have any time.
Right.
They feel like they don't have any space. And so in A'u'i, is time and space. And so, of course, these corporations are going to use Apple and sounds like those because people want that. It sounds big and open.
Yeah, Amazon and Alpha. Google's Alphabet now. It's Google's company.
You know, and M means quality. So Amazon, that's quality, high quality things. Oh, yeah, quality.
Oh, my God. Well,
and Z is cutting loose. So you can cut loose and buy anything you want with Amazon.
Because, like we said, look, these people that are behind these multi-billion-dollar corporations, they're using the same magical understandings that we have as people that have studied these things. We just wouldn't use it that way.
Exactly.
They are.
Exactly.
What do you think about that? Does it ever make you cringe sometimes when you see something and you know, because sometimes I see these things and it makes me cringe because you know the intention, but yet you know the magic behind it. But then you also know that the average person, it goes right over their head and you're just like,
it can be very disturbing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It can be very nefarious, but sometimes it just makes me cringe.
Yes.
So then tell me about the angelic forces and how they work with tarot and nature spirits.
Yes. Well, all these beings, like nature spirits and angels, their primary intent is to communicate with us. They desire to impart their wisdom and knowledge. And to do that, they have to be very clever. Because much of what they have to impart, we're not ready to hear, or we're not open to it, or we're not on that wavelength. And so they try with other means to communicate with us. And you know, they're right there. I mean, they're with us all the time. People think of these things as something that's far off, but it's not. It's not. It's a matter of getting on the wavelength.
They're with us in the minutia of daily life. I mean, I don't want to put an encapsulation on it, but it seems like the entirety of the divine experience is with us at every second, every turn, every thought. It's just right there. Yes. The angels, the ancestors, and literally the source itself, whatever that is.
Yes. No, I think that's totally accurate. Totally true. It is like that. And also these angels, they tend to work in groups, and they very much work with each other. And part of me is really interested in knowing more about what their names are, which ones are working with me and stuff like that. But really, they kind of want to remain hidden in terms of their identity. And the reason is because people can get so bound up in thinking about them that they lose sight of what they're saying, what they're trying to communicate.
Oh, I totally agree. And also, as humans, it seems like we have to be careful to not form attachments to the communications, like feeling that we're special. Again, the ego attachment, it's hard not to, it's because it's so powerful for people when they have these experiences, getting the names, it just might feed that a little bit more.
Yes. Well, and of course, the angelic names too can be used as vibrational tools.
Because it's healing. That's the thing. It seems like at the end of the day, the purpose of tarot and what you're talking about is to create a conduit for healing. The angels want to heal us. Evolution is healing and moving forward. Can you talk about that, the healing aspect?
Well, that's one that I think has not been explored enough. People have explored how to use flowers for healing, like Bach flower remedies and California Flower Essence Society and things like that. They've used many different things for healing, but I don't know of any book that really talks about using the tarot for healing. And that's an idea that I'm exploring very strongly. I would like to bring that more into the mass consciousness, that the tarot can be used for healing.
It seems exactly like it should be, because if you think about it, you're divining this information for help, for a very pure intention, which is healing. You're gonna get the best information, and then you can utilize that to heal psychologically, physically, energetically, all of these things.
Right. And I believe, I'm a firm believer too in, well, one way of saying it is subtexts. You know, like when people come to me for a reading, so it's not just what I'm saying to them, the words. It's can be my tone of voice. It can be the way I put things or the way I repeat things. It's the vibration surrounding the whole thing. And so to set the intent that the healing is going to come not just through whatever verbal information I impart, but through everything else also.
Yeah, there's subtle communications that happen, and that spirit talking through and working through the person.
Yes.
Okay, and there's another aspect too, which you incorporated, which is the tree of life. Can you talk about the tree of life a little bit as well and what that means in the context of this tarot book?
The tree of life is a Kabbalistic diagram. And it comes from the Kabbalah. And it's made up of what are called stations, or in Kabbalah, it's Sephiroth. And there are 10 stations on the tree of life. And they are set up in three columns, a left column, a right column, and a middle column. The left and right columns have three stations each. The middle column has four. So that way you get 3 + 3 + 4 = 10. And then they're read, these stations are read from the top to the bottom. The stations that are on the left side are feminine in vibration, and on the right side are masculine in vibration. And the ones that are down the center are balanced. They're about balanced. And the Tree of Life is a map for the whole of reality. And also in each one of these stations, I don't like that world, that word really. Let's use the word realm. In each one of these realms on the Tree of Life, I don't like station because it sounds like a gas station. It makes it too mundane.
I like the realm. No, that sounds beautiful.
Yes. In each one of these realms, there's a Tree of Life. And in that tree of life, in each one of its realms, there's a tree of life. And so it goes on ad infinitum. So the tree of life mirrors itself through all of its parts. And those 10 stations on the tree of life are ruled by the 10 planets of astrology.
So that's the bridge.
They figure in understanding the minor arcana. The minor arcana has 4 suits, which go with fire, air, earth, and water. And each suit has numbers 1 through 10 that correspond to those 10 stations on the tree of life. And then 4 what they call court cards, which is a knight, a king, a queen, and a princess. It used to be a page, but in C.C. Zane, it was changed to princess, because then that way there can be 2 males and 2 females.
Interesting.
Otherwise, there's just 1 female, you know. So
this is just another layer of this experience, is incorporating that the astrology is the bridge.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, my God. So then this, all of this information, you could say, is like the summation of everything you've learned up until this point. Close to 60 years of experience.
I would say yes. It mirrors. The tarot is not about one thing. It's about everything.
Right.
Same can be said about astrology. It really isn't about one thing. Everything has astrological vibrations in it. Everything.
Absolutely.
Do you know where your moon is?
My moon is in Leo.
A Leo moon. That's really great for the work you do.
Yeah. I have that kind of bombastic personality that allows me to be forthright. And yet the Libra, the listening Libra, the compassion, the love for all humanity. It's a great combo.
Yeah. Well, the Leo is like a bright and sunshiny and very expressive.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that's where I get it from.
That's great.
Well, you know, my wife tells me that all the time. You know, she always talks about my Leo nature, though I do have a lot of Libra. And I think I'm a triple Leo as well. I'm not sure exactly of my full chart at the moment.
That's great. Have you ever seen on TikTok the lion playing with the dachshunds?
I've seen similar videos, and another guest was just talking about this. Yes. I mean, that where, you know, the animal consciousness is raising, there's seemingly, you know, generational cellular conflicts are healing. That's what it seems like.
Yes.
It's mind blowing.
It's really wonderful.
It is very powerful. Is that what you're talking about in relation to astrology?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Is that where humanity's going right now? Is that what we're moving into? It seems like we're shaking something off energetically and moving towards something bigger. Well, what does that look like astrologically with this system on your end? How would you describe this ascension time that we're going through?
Well, for one thing, Pluto is going into Aquarius. It's already in there now. And it's going to be there for a long, you know, like 20 years. And so much is going to be happening in the next 20 years. And it's going to be really a time of coming together and of working out conflicts. Because I believe we are in the Aquarian age, and Aquarius rules groups. But the negative side of Aquarius is groups formed for negative purposes and groups that are based on elitism. And so I think the spiritual groups that are going to be coming about more and more are groups based on mutual support on a spiritual level.
Wow. It does seem like we're advancing in that way, both evolving as the individual and evolving into the collective, understanding that we are all one and it's okay. Doesn't mean that we're surrendering our sovereignty to love each other and think of each other as equal and united, that we're not giving something up. And if anything, we're letting something in.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, like, I think I've led a very private sort of existence. I used to kind of berate myself for not having reached out more in my life. But I have, I'm like kind of like hypersensitive. And so I used to get overwhelmed by going to the grocery store.
Oh, I know the feeling. I smoke a cannabis to deal with that. That's what I use for shielding.
Yes, that's great. That's great. The Neptune needs shielding. You know, that Neptune energy is so important right now.
Because that is where you said Pluto's in Aquarius. What is going on with Neptune's energy?
Neptune now, I believe, is in Pisces, which is its ruling sign. Yeah, so Neptune is really very, very potent at this point.
Now, what about things like AI? Like, if that evolves into a true consciousness, is that going to affect us astrologically? Does that consciousness have its own astrological situation as well?
Well, you know, we're the ones that are creating that consciousness. And I think, well, there are ways we could program it to manifest in more and more spiritual ways. I think that's possible. I make jokes about this. I talk about, when are we going to start working on artificial intelligence? Because what we've really worked it on perfecting is artificial stupidity.
Yeah.
And we've done a great job of that. We now are using computers in all these really stupid ways. And we're using it mainly for advertising and for marketing and like that, and or to like phony information, lies and stuff like that. I don't consider that artificial intelligence. That's artificial stupidity.
Absolutely. So
I'm looking forward to the development of artificial intelligence. I think it's great.
I think it will come because, again, much like psychedelics, much like the internet age, once you let certain things out, you can't put them back in. And then they start to evolve on their own path.
Outside
of our
control. Everything has a life of its own.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So if it's truly coming from source and it's meant to manifest, then we must, as magical people say, that it's rooted in love. And let's take the approach of love first. And then if it turns into Terminator, we'll deal with that. How about that?
Yes. That sounds great.
Well, you know what sounds great is our interview. We've had such an incredible conversation. We talked about so much of this book. I want people to get this. If you want to learn about tarot, if you want to learn about astrology, if you want to learn about these things, it's all there within the book. It's not just about these multidimensional descriptions of each card and how they work with each other. There's a history there. There's a general understanding interwoven in those chapters I thought was absolutely amazing.
I'm so glad you enjoyed the book. That makes me so happy.
Well, it was noticeable. I really enjoy books that have a focus, but at the same time, don't just assume that everybody knows exactly what you're talking about. It's okay to give people a little context. And for people that have already known that information for a very long time, hey, it's an affirmation. It just strengthens that in your consciousness. Don't hate on it. Just move forward.
And I really set the intent on writing that book that it would carry a healing vibration. And, you know, if you're not of an intellectual mindset, when it comes to certain numerology and some of those more intellectual things that are in the book, just osmose your way through them. You know, don't feel like you have to figure out anything, but just take in the energy of the book. And I think that can feed your own intuition.
Oh, absolutely. Because once you start and you work with what you have, then you learn, you integrate that, you can go back, and then that information's still there. And now you have a knowledge base to process that, and you're learning that much more. And let me tell you, people, if you want to have a reading with John, if you're hearing this information, you're hearing how incredible John is, the book, I absolutely can't recommend it enough. Definitely get it. Go to his website, johnsandbach.net. I'm going to spell it for you. johnsandbach.net. johnsandbach.net. You can go there. There's courses. You can get a reading. There's books, not just the book we're talking about today, The Soul Journey Through the Tarot. He has several other books. How to Use Harmonics, like we talked about earlier, Astrology, Alchemy, and the Tarot, The Mysteries of Color, The Circular Temple series, which we're going to talk about next time, because when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, I have to read that. That's all available on his site, Amazon. He does astrological counseling. You can go there. Just check it all out. It's all there for people. John, thank you so much for being here. We've had such a cool...
Well, thank you so much.
Yes. Epic conversation. I love talking with high-frequency, like-minded people because, you know, then the best stuff comes out.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful.
But before we go, yeah. Is there anything else you want to leave our audience with? You know, we're hitting 178 countries now. We're all over the world. You know, people are listening. They're loving this information. Is there anything you'd like to leave the people with?
Yes. Just that, you know, you can't go wrong when you reach out. I've been talking more and more to people on the street, just people I pass or, you know, people that I meet in a happenstance way, and just sharing light with them, making jokes or asking them how they feel, things like that. It's so important, that kind of connectedness. And also to not let negative news get to you. These are all things we're passing through that are a part of our own growth, and we are going to make it through them.
Absolutely. That was so beautiful, John. Thank you so much again for being here.
Oh, thank you, Jake. It was just really wonderful meeting you.
Well, we're going to have you back on. There's still so much to talk about. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We're just getting to know each other.
Oh, good. That sounds great.
All right. Fantastic. Well, please hold through the outro music. And everyone, yes, check out the website, the books. You'll get a download like you won't believe. When you get this, you're interested in Tarot. You're interested in these concepts. Check out this book. We'll see you next week. Midnight on Earth.
Great.